As always, we start with our messages. You can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/batflips_nerds, facebook.com/batflipsandnerds, and our website, batflipsandnerds.com. It's another special guest interview for us today. And our guest today is the general manager of the official minor league baseball affiliate of the UK, the Erie Seawolves. That's Greg Coleman. So welcome, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Happy to be here.
Excellent. So it was a good result for you guys last night against Binghamton. So the teams are 8-6. You're half a game back of first. It's early days, but you must be pretty pleased with how things have started.
Yeah, you never know when a team comes to town whether or not they're gonna perform early on. You know, they're leaving spring training and it's, you know, 70, 80 degrees, and they get to Erie and it's, you know, 40, 50 degrees, and they have to get adjusted to a new lifestyle. They have to find places to live. And so the first couple of weeks can be really, really difficult for a player to make that transition. So to be sitting where we are, a half game out of first place, we feel pretty good right now.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. I guess the Tigers, a lot of those guys will have been over in Arizona, right? And Erie's a rather different place at this time of the year, I guess.
It's a different place. Now, the Tigers actually train in Florida. They're in Lakeland, mm-hmm. Florida. But it's still quite different. the players know that if they want to be successful in Detroit, playing at the big league level, hey, you know what? It's cold there during this time of year as well. So they're professionals about it.
Yeah, definitely is. You see a lot of the guys at this time of year in places like Detroit and Cleveland and Boston all wearing snoods and all sorts. It's quite funny watching it over on this side of the pond where it's just cold all the time here. But I'm glad that it is up in Erie as well. Maybe that's another reason why we've got the right team to be working with. So I wanted to start by talking a little bit about minor league baseball and how it's different from the major leagues. I think a lot of people hear about the promos that you guys do, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the ones that you guys are doing a little later on in the conversation. But what are the major points of difference? I mean, clearly these are younger players, they're developing players, but it feels like it's maybe much more of a community thing with the minor league teams. And I guess that's the case with you guys. Am I right?
It absolutely is. And I think there's a pretty big distinction between, you know, the major league operation, the minor league operation, because of player control. And when I say that, at the major league level, you sign a player to a contract, you draft them, you may develop them and bring them up to the major leagues, but they're under contract to your organization, which means you know they're going to be there if you want them to be there. Now, obviously, there are things like injuries that folks can't control, but you know that if you sign a star, that star is going to be playing for you. At the minor league level, we have little to no control over what the makeup of the roster is because the player development decisions are made by the Detroit Tigers. So they basically say, here are your 25 players, and send those players and the coaches to Erie. They basically play here almost independently. Even though I'm the general manager, I don't decide who bats fourth or who plays third base. They're basically, you know, being sent here to develop. And that means that they also can be sent up to the next level. We're a double-A franchise. Mm-hmm. That means our players are typically 1 to 2 years away from the major leagues. They can be sent up to triple-A, the next level up, and they can be in the big leagues in a couple of days, and we have no say over it. Now, we obviously want to help the players get to the major leagues, but it makes building your team or your brand around the brand of baseball very difficult, because we can't sit there and say, hey, you know what, we're going to be winning. We're going to win a lot of games. We've got a great team. I can't guarantee you that the roster that's in Erie today is going to be the roster that's going to be in Erie 2 days from now. So it means that you focus on the things that are off the field, the fan experience, and being good to the community, and you basically make your brand and your mascots, to a secondary degree, the stars instead of the players.
Yeah, I can see that, definitely. We'll come on to that in a second. I just wanted to touch on that relationship with the Tigers. How hand in glove is that? I mean, are you on the phone to the guys in the Tigers front office sort of day to day? Obviously, they're directing a lot of things from over in Detroit. But how does that relationship manifest itself? Are they at the park every day and so on, or are they working more through your manager, for example?
Well, the manager is definitely the point person for baseball operations, but the Tigers do typically have personnel here every series we play. Now, it may be a roving infield instructor, where when I say roving field instructor, they're here today, and maybe next week they'll be working with infielders in Toledo, mm-hmm. the following week in West Michigan. These are all our affiliates. And so they'll go around and see how the players are progressing based on a schedule. So right now, as it is, we have, I think, probably about 8 or 9 different folks from the Detroit Tigers that are in town. Now, that's a lot, and that probably only happens maybe 2 to 3 times per year. But right now, we have a significant group of folks out here, including former Detroit Tigers shortstop, Alan Trammell. He was out here throwing batting practice yesterday. Wow. So we're in touch with them almost daily. And the more moves there are in terms of, for instance, Miguel Cabrera at the big league level just went on the disabled list yesterday. Well, that creates a whole series of transactions that have to happen in the minor leagues. And then we all have to make our adjustments accordingly. So yesterday was a fairly busy day to make those adjustments.
So what happened yesterday in terms of you? Did you lose a couple of guys yesterday up to Toledo?
Well, two things happened. First, when Cabrera went on the disabled list, we did have a player that went up to Toledo, because Toledo had a player that went up to the Tigers. So mm-hmm. So it just trickles down throughout the system. But then during yesterday's Tigers game, their outfielder, Jacoby Jones, who played for us the last 2 years, was hit by a pitch. Mm-hmm. And so he is going to be out of the lineup for at least 10 days. And that created another transaction that had to happen. So one of our outfielders ended up going to Toledo yesterday as well. So two transactions in a day is not uncommon, but it's more likely to typically be one. So yesterday was just a busy day, because you don't expect the player's going to get hit by a pitch in a big league game, and then you're going to have to react throughout the minor league system. But that's what happened.
Yeah, and I guess that's pretty stressful for you in terms of collecting players, make sure they're turning up in Erie, make sure you're getting them on planes to get out of town and over to Toledo and up to Detroit, I guess.
Yeah, it can be tricky. I mean, this morning we've got the replacement player coming in, and we've got to get the ballpark ready to go for a game day, but we also need to make sure that we're picking up a player in Buffalo, which is about an hour and 40 minutes away. So just trying to make sure you have that lined up, and you don't know if at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night whether you're going to be able to get a shuttle service or somebody who's going to be available in the morning. So it can be a little tricky. It's more difficult on holidays. There have been many cases when we had to get somebody 4 hours away on Easter Sunday, and that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. But, you learn how to do it over time.
Yeah. I imagine you do. I imagine you're a bit of a sort of old hand when it comes to doing that by now. Just sort of dwelling on you. So how long is it that you've been with the Seawolves?
This is my 7th season with the Seawolves. For me, it's actually my 20th season in minor league baseball. But the last 6 years now, like I said, now into the 7th season, have been with the Tigers affiliate here in Erie, and love it here, and enjoy being here. Really enjoy working with the Tigers. They always put a competitive product on the field at the big league level, great people to work with for sure.
And how do you get a job like yours? I mean, it's quite an unusual one. It's a sort of a mix between what you might see as a general manager in the major leagues and maybe more of a president role, looking more at the commercial side of it. So how do you end up being general manager of the Erie Seawolves, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, whoever it is? And what's your day-to-day? I mean, we've talked a little bit about how it worked yesterday, but what's the average day in the life of Greg Coleman?
Well, I'd say the average day is there is no average day. you have to wear a lot of hats. And I guess I'll start with how do you get in? For me, my first job in minor league baseball was as the director of marketing and media relations for the Daytona Cubs. Now, they're now the Daytona Tortugas, but they were a Cubs affiliate when I broke in 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, the Cubs were looking for someone who could wear a couple of hats, someone who could work with the local media, someone who could help create some promotions, someone who could also serve as the team's public address announcer, which I did that year.
Okay.
And I had done some things while I was attending the College of New Jersey here in in New Jersey where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they saw something on my resume that they liked. I had sent it out to pretty much every minor league team I could get my hands on. So I sent that out, and they liked the combination of things I had done while attending school, and got an interview, and must have done fairly well because I got the job. And then from there, it just becomes a matter of identifying what your next professional step is going to be. So for me, I went from there to learning about the sales side of the business and leading the sales side for the Orlando franchise at the time, which was Tampa Bay's AA team. I moved out to California to become assistant general manager of operations for the Oakland A's affiliate at the time, which was the Modesto A's. Mm-hmm. Eventually ended up moving back to my hometown in Trenton, New Jersey, working for the Trenton Thunder, mm-hmm. Staying on the business operations side. Went and opened up a new ballpark in Bowling Green for the Rays again, which that's Bowling Green, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And then ended up back in Pennsylvania here with the Erie Seawolves. So kind of a roundabout path, but you, over time, you gain experience in different aspects of the business. So at this point, I know how to use a fryer in the concession stand as well as I do sell a $500,000 sponsorship. So you learn all those, and then you learn obviously the baseball side of things as well. So every single day, what we're trying to do is we're trying to put fans in the ballpark to help the players develop. They have to get used to playing in front of progressively larger crowds as they get to the big leagues. They have to get used to greater demands, more television cameras, more people covering the games. And on the baseball side, we're trying to help them develop on and off the field. And the way we do that is be successful as a business off the field.
Sure. I was going to touch a little on your relationship with the town of Erie. I mean, for starters, given that, you know, we're all listening to this and hoping to learn a little bit about the place that we're forming a mutual bond with. So what's Erie like as a town? It looks like it's I think it's a college town if I've read that rightly, and it's a really picturesque place. And I was sort of wanted to ask about their relationship with you as a ball club and with sports more generally as well.
Well, Erie itself, the city of Erie is about 100,000 people. And if you look at Erie County, it's a little closer to about 280,000 people. Mm-hmm. So if you were looking at a map and looking at the state of Pennsylvania, we're the little notch in the upper left-hand corner, mm-hmm. In the northwest of Pennsylvania. So we're the only part of Pennsylvania that actually touches the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. So we are about 10 blocks from Lake Erie, and there really are two times a year here. I mean, there's winter and baseball season. Okay. And in winter, we have one of the highest snowfall totals in the country for cities of 100,000 people or more. Mm-hmm. So it is fairly routine to have 110, 120 inches of snow over the course of the winter.
Wow.
And this year was a little bit lighter. I mean, you say a lighter year is probably somewhere in the area of 60 to 80 inches of snow, which you still get. So that's a good portion of the winter. But what that means is by the time you get to spring and summer, everybody wants to be outside.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to enjoy the sunshine, the warmer temperatures. And so Erie is a very vibrant place during the summer months, where there's live music most nights of the week. There are downtown block parties that are free to attend with live music, and the community comes together. They get out on the water and boat and fish and enjoy that. We have a beautiful state park, Presque Isle State Park. Locally, it's called the Peninsula, just informally. And folks will go out there and they'll ride their bikes or they'll go to the beach. We have freshwater beaches. They'll get out and exercise and really enjoy it almost the first day that weather breaks. By the way, this year, the first day that weather broke was in February, and that place was packed.
Right.
So now, don't get me wrong, winter came back a little bit after that, but it's just a great place to be outside. And as someone who's running a professional baseball team, I'll take the snow during the winter, because here during the summer, it really is as nice as it is anywhere. and it's a pleasant place to be, and I just enjoy the heck out of it. So that covers a lot of it. I will say we are a blue collar working class type of a community. Mm-hmm. And so from my mindset, we're sort of I don't say the underdog, but we definitely work hard, and then when it's time to play, we play hard. And so it's a great place to be. It's been a great place for me to raise a family, and we love it here.
And I guess that's a very different challenge for you, trying to run a baseball club when you're competing with people running block parties and people going fishing. You know, your competition is quite different to what you might get in one of the more metropolitan centers, you know, Chicago or New York, really.
Yeah, every place is a little bit different, and there's competition everywhere. You know, I can tell you that when I worked for the team in Trenton, New Jersey, one of the big things there was the Jersey Shore, and pretty much everywhere in the state, you know, you could get to a beach within an hour. And, you know, so as a result, you would have, you'd have your holidays, your holiday weekends, where, you know, folks are off for 3 days. It was very difficult to sell baseball an hour inland when they could be in their car and enjoying the sun and the surf and the sand. And so every place has their challenges. It's just a matter of, you know, how you work through them and how you take advantage of your strengths. And, you know, you learn over time how to do that. But you listen to the folks that are in the local community because they're the ones who have the answers.
I'm sure. And in terms of, so looking at the team this year, obviously some of the roster moves over the last couple of days or so might have turned things around. So do you think you've got a good group there this year? I know you've got some of the top 10, top 20 prospects in the Tiger system, in the likes of, we mentioned Mike Gerber when we were corresponding by email, who won the Gold Glove in the Eastern League last year. You've got Kristen Stewart, Tyler Alexander. This looks like it's quite a good team, one that people will be turning up, providing those guys are going to be on the field every day.
Yeah, there's some talent here. You know, Kristen Stewart is the top power prospect in the Tigers organization. We've seen some flashes of it. We had a doubleheader fairly early in the season, I think maybe the second day, and I think he hit three home runs in the doubleheader. And so he's an exciting player to watch. Mike Gerber is not a guy that was selected high in the draft. I think he was somewhere around a 15th round draft choice, but he's a player who can play obviously defensively because he won a Gold Glove award. And offensively, he just hits the ball. He may not have the same power punch that Stewart has, but he'll hit the ball to the gaps. And our outfield is very formidable. I mean, we may have as good, if not the best, outfield in the Eastern League. We have some talent in other places. Tyler Alexander is a good solid pitcher. He's probably a little bit more of a crafty guy. He's not a guy that probably is going to, you know, light up the radar gun in the high 90s, but he's a guy that gets people out. And so he's someone that, you know, the big league club thinks he's a back of the rotation type of guy, you know, at the major league level. Our catcher, Grayson Griner, he is 6'6", a big guy. I mean, there are not many catchers that are that tall. No. And so he's a guy who they think his ceiling is at the very minimum a big league backup catcher. And you know, if he continues to develop as a hitter as well, could be an everyday player behind the plate. Now the Tigers have a pretty good player behind the plate right now in James McCann, another former Seawolves catcher. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how quickly he develops and what do they do if they have to make that decision between those two players in a couple of years. But talented player, big player. So those are a couple of folks. We've got a player who just was assigned to us yesterday as a result of the roster moves who is an exciting guy to watch. His name's Adam Ravenel. And Adam, he's a relief pitcher. He hits the mid to high 90s. He was sidetracked a little bit last year with an injury, and unfortunately, you know, that kind of set him back a little bit. But he seems to be 100% now, so it's going to be interesting to see him out there throwing. I just saw him in person for the first time this year yesterday. Welcomed him back, exciting. I'm going to be excited to see how the radar gun lights up when he's out there.
Great. That sounds like there's plenty for us to get excited about and keep an eye on. I just talking about some of the, you mentioned James McCann there, and you know, you've got a laundry list of any great player in the last 5 to 10 years who's now with the Tiger system has come through you guys. So Verlander, Michael Fulmer, as recently as a couple of years ago, Andrew Miller, who of course is, you know, the relief pitching star over at the Cleveland Indians, have all come through your system. I wondered sort of firstly, what relationship, if any, do you have with those guys? Do they still sort of talk to you, come back and see you as part of their development? And how does it make you feel as the GM and you know, the guys working around the club feel to see those guys there being the leading lights of the MLB?
Well, obviously from a baseball side of things, the objective is to get these players to the major league level, contributing as soon as possible and as effectively as possible. And obviously we'd like that to happen with the Detroit Tigers, but the way things work sometimes is the needs at the major league level don't always sync up with how players develop in the minor leagues. And so sometimes those players, you have them and they need to be traded off to other organizations to fill the voids that the major league club does have and need. So we've got a number of players. You mentioned Andrew Miller. If you look around Major League Baseball right now, Devin Travis, the second baseman for the Toronto Blue Jays, he's a former Seawolves player. Eugenio Suarez with the Cincinnati Reds, who hit 2 home runs yesterday. He's another former Seawolves player. Matter of fact, those two guys, I think they played together for a period of time. That's a pretty good combination up the middle.
Yeah, I know.
When you see these guys get there, obviously you're excited. Now, as far as the relationship going forward, you do stay in touch, and one of the ways we stay in touch is by doing some of the things we do promotionally to recognize them. So James McCann, we created a James McCann bobblehead last year, and we did it in a way that made his throwing arm, his right arm, a cannon, because his nickname is McCannon. and so, you know, we wanted to make sure that if we were going to give away a James McCann bobblehead, that he liked what it looked like. Did he think it was a good representation? Did he like the way the cannon looked on his arm? And so, we'll send some early pictures to the players and say, hey, you know, we want to do this, and here's what we're thinking. What do you think? And overwhelmingly, the majority of the time is, oh, that's so cool. It's great to see these guys have success. We do have the opportunity to connect with them at some different events during the course of the year. The Tigers have an annual event called Tiger Fest that we send people to in Detroit, and we're able to catch up there, maybe even grab some video. Last week, I think it was, the Tigers were in Cleveland, and our newspaper writer went over and got some quotes from the players that had played here, and McCann in particular was very complimentary. He said, yeah, some of my best memories in the minor leagues were in Erie, and I've got nothing but fond memories of Erie and the fans in Erie. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said.
Yeah, I get it.
And so it's nice to hear that type of thing, and it means that they had a great experience, and we want them to have success.
Great. It's interesting that you mentioned the relationship through the promos and things like bobbleheads. I was going to come on to promos because they're a huge part of minor league baseball. And I think even casual fans in the UK recognize that. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your process, how you and the team there come up with these things, because some of them are, and we'll come on to one or two of them, that you guys are doing particularly or have done. But do you just essentially, over the winter, when you've got your 60 to 80 inches of snow, just sit around a table or sit around a barbecue, a log fire, thinking about what's the craziest thing we could possibly do?
Well, unless, we might need to sit around a log fire. That actually might provide some new inspiration, but we haven't done that yet. But I guess it all starts with a schedule. So we will get a draft of the schedule typically in May, or at the very latest, the 1st of June for the following year. Mm-hmm. And when we get that schedule, 80 to 90% of that schedule is going to be exactly the way it is given to us. The days of the week, the opponents, there will be a couple of maybe minor changes that the teams might, you know, orchestrate for the betterment of both teams, maybe because it eases travel. Some game times might help because of a certain event in the community. But by the time we get to mid-June, that schedule is pretty firm. So we look at that and look at the strengths in the schedule and try to understand, well, what is here that we should be taking advantage of? Are we home during special events locally? Are we home during special events nationally? There are certain events that we built up ourselves that fall within a certain window of time. And we want to make sure that early in the process that those get on the calendar, because fans have come to expect that we're going to be doing them at a certain time of year. So we plug in the things that are, standard. And then from there, what we'll do is we will start meeting every 2 weeks and discussing a part of the year. We'll start with a 7-game homestand and say, okay, here's this 7 games. Here are some ideas that we've thrown out for these 7 games because, maybe there's a certain convention that's happening in town and we want to appeal to that group of folks that are coming in. Let's build a promotion that ties into that. Great example. This July and every July, there's a large motorcycle rally in Erie. It brings about 100,000 people to Erie over a span of about 5 days. And it's called Roar on the Shore. And we are often, because of how the schedule falls, not home during Roar on the Shore, but we are this year. Mm-hmm. And so we've discussed with their officials and we'll be having a poker run, if you will, or a ride. But basically the folks that are attending this event on the Sunday of Roar on the Shore, they will be ending their recreational ride that day at the ballpark with a Seawolves game. And so by looking at the schedule and saying, oh, we're home during Roar on the Shore, what can we do to tap into that? You know, we've created this partnership where folks can do what they do, enjoy riding a bike, and then come in and watch a ball game afterwards as well. So, but basically we meet every 2 weeks, really from about August through about early January, refining the promotions. But the funny thing is, even though we do that, there are things that pop up that are pop culture oriented, that come out of nowhere. And those sometimes end up being the best promotions, not the ones we spent 4 months working on.
Yeah, well, I guess one of those is the one that's garnered a lot of publicity. And I think it was the reason that so many people said we should have you as part of our fun that we've been having over the last fortnight, which is the alternative facts night. So I was interested to know where that one had come from and how that was going to manifest itself, other than there obviously being 2 million people at the ballpark and a 25-35 final score on the day.
Well, it's funny because it's not where you think it came from. It's the origin of it was a little bit different. So there was a news crew that came to Erie and did a story there. We became a popular, I guess, news outlet destination because Erie, which is a historically Democrat supporting area, Erie County actually voted for Donald Trump, and that was unusual. It was unusual, and I don't think that they had voted for a Republican president since Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. And so it had been a number of years. Now, the city of Erie itself still was a Democratic stronghold and still remained the same, but Erie County heavily supported Donald Trump, the rural suburban areas. So, so you'd have these news crews that would come to town and say, well, why is that? Why did that happen? And one particular news crew came in and they told a story, and it was a very negative portrayal. It was a very one-sided story about Erie, and it wasn't fair. Just really came down. And it basically created a lot of ire in the local community. Mm-hmm. And folks pushed back with a campaign which was called hashtag My Erie, and people would get on and start, you know, tweeting, photos of the great amusement park we have here, the beaches, the ballpark, all of these things that we have, because the portrayal was just so, you know, so lopsided that the journalist was trying to tell the story that they wanted to tell. And it felt like, you know, to use the pop culture phrase, it felt like fake news. Okay. And so we were inspired to do something around the fake news idea. And we said, look, we're pretty mad about this. We want to take a leadership position in it. So let's come up with a fake news promotion. And as we talked through the concept, we said, you know what? This is actually it's not a fake news thing, and it's not even about Erie. It's, you know, alternative facts night is where we should be going with this.
Okay.
And we had about three people in a room that were just kicking around ideas. And then all of a sudden, when we came up with the idea of, you know, we're going to take liberties with all these facts. And oh, by the way, one of them is that we won an Eastern League championship last year. For those who don't know, we finished solidly in fourth place. Mm-hmm. And in fact have never won an Eastern League championship since we've been playing in the league. We said, you know, hey, this is our opportunity to give fans an experience that they haven't had. And so once we came across that, everything else fell into place.
It sounds great. I won't ask for any spoilers in terms of what's going to be happening, but we'll bit of a watch this space. Another one of the promos that was mentioned in the preview podcast that we did about this a couple of weeks ago with Benjamin Hill from MILB.com. I think he was at your park maybe last year or the year before, and he talked about seeing you in a rather compromised position. I think you know where I'm going with that in terms of promoting men's health. It sounded like you were fairly game. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about.
How did that one happen?
Well, first off, if you're gonna be working for a minor league team, you have to have a very open mind. In this particular case, that wasn't the only thing that was open, but in any case, in minor league baseball, we've got a pretty close knit community, and we know, you know, in the front office that we want to try to have a great impact, in our community, on our fan base, and so every once in a while something strikes a chord, and there was the ice bucket challenge that had gone around and was very, very popular for a while with lots of videos, and somewhere along the line a GM decided he was going to try to do this because of something happening in his local community, and created what they call the two knuckle challenge, which is basically a prostate exam during a game. And after one general manager did this, he passed it on to the next, who passed it on to the next, very similar to that ice bucket challenge, just in a more embarrassing and compromising kind of way. And the whole concept being is, hey, listen, if one of these executives can do this during a game in a public setting, then, you know, when you get to an age, to the men in the crowd, when you get really by the time you're 50, but, you know, maybe sooner if you have certain risk factors, you can do it. So I sang Take Me Out to the Ball Game, getting stretched, just like Harry Carey did all those years ago, except I did it while getting a prostate exam. And I actually had the lyrics written down on paper, taped to the counter in front of me, because at some point I figured I'm going to get distracted enough that I may forget the words to a song I've sung thousands of times and heard hundreds of times every single year. And it accomplished what we were trying to accomplish. People learned about it. And actually a gentleman, Ed Randall, who actually runs a foundation to let people know about men's health issues, particularly prostate cancer, saw me at the baseball winter meetings after that and came up to me and gave me a big hug, because he's actually a prostate cancer survivor. Mm-hmm. And so it is about fun, but we have a platform that we can use to make our communities better, and we have to use it.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, my father himself is a prostate cancer survivor who was diagnosed through having the exam. So Tom and I laughed a lot when we heard about it, and then the penny dropped as to why you were doing it, and particularly in my case, I felt rather embarrassed about the fact that I found it so funny. But you know, that's it. It's, you can have fun whilst putting across an important message, can't you? Sorry, just to sort of take it through 180 degrees and from something really important to something slightly silly. So we established a relationship, contact with you probably a couple of weeks ago, where we decided that we wanted a team over here in the UK that everyone could root for, because we're all, you know, Red Sox fans, Yankees fans, Dodgers fans, or whoever it is, and we're all, you know, having a phony war on Twitter, and we wanted a team that we could all support, and we ran our bracket, and you guys engaged in it brilliantly, and that was fantastic to see. And now you are, of course, the UK affiliate in the minor league baseball. So I'm wondering, when and where do we come into your promotions? When's the UK night?
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. So I think we're going to start this thing off with a press event where we make this official and make the announcement, and do it via video. Whether I myself am in London or wherever it may be, maybe through the benefit of technology and green screens. but we'll make a formal announcement, and part of that plan is to have a UK night at the ballpark. Now, I think our question is, is this really just a night, or is this a more significant part of what we're going to be doing this year? And so, at the bare minimum, we're going to have a game that's dedicated to it. We've got some ideas, but what we welcome is contributions from you and from your listeners as well, because we know, I guess, the Americanized version of the UK, and what we don't know is all of the details. There are a lot of colloquialisms that you've shared, either in speaking in person or even via tweets, and we want to bring some of those to Erie and bring some of those to the United States, but we can't do that without your help, and we certainly can't do it without some misinterpretation, or do it without avoiding misinterpretation, I should say. The last thing we want to be doing is saying one thing and saying the wrong thing. So I think we can have a lot of fun with it. I do think we're going to roll out at least one piece of merchandise that tells fans that we're the affiliate of the UK. It may something. Maybe something along the lines of a shirt that says we're huge in the UK, something along those lines.
Yeah, I love it.
huge, using Donald Trump's pronunciation.
Bigly in the UK.
Yeah. So, but we're not the experts. We're not the experts on it. But you know what? We're very rarely are the experts on anything. What we do is we go to the folks who are the experts and say, "Tell us about this. What should we be doing? Give me your best advice and feedback." Than our, what we are experts in is sort of distilling that down into what we should actually be doing. And so we're going to rely on you to help us bring the culture, whether it be for one night or for a longer period of time, to Erie, Pennsylvania. We're going to make a big deal about it.
Brilliant. I mean, it sounds like a match made in heaven, and we can certainly help you. You know, we're just four idiots having a bit of fun and enjoying our baseball, and we can certainly give you some ideas. We can help you with the interpretation, and I know that anyone who's listening and following the blog, we had, you know, hundreds of people who were voting on these things, and it kind of took us by surprise. But any help that we can give, we certainly will. And it's awesome that there's going to be merch and there's going to be nights, and we'll see if we can get some people over there. It'd be brilliant. Get some friends out there to help you celebrate. But just before we do that, before we get too far in, I do want to sort of test your commitment to this by asking you a few questions about the UK, if you don't mind.
Ask away. I can tell you that if you ask me this probably in about 4 months, it'll probably be a lot better in terms of the results. But this is the pretest. Let's call it that. All right.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. This is your first lesson, okay? I'm not expecting you to know the right answer to any of these questions, but you know, you can take away. Make, I hope you've got your pad out. You can make notes. It's multiple choice, so you know, you might get some of them right by fluke.
All right, fire away.
Okay, so the first question is, who is the captain of the England cricket team? Is it A, Steve Smith, or B, Joe Root?
Well, we're starting off right out of the box, and I have no idea. We're going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, Steve Smith. That's a bad start. Steve Smith is the captain of the Australia cricket team.
Oh, right? That's fantastic.
The UK is the biggest rivals. But anyway, make sure Joe Root, just write down Joe Root.
All right, Joe. By the way, we have a very different meaning of Joe Root here. We have a Joe Root's grill here. Joe Root apparently used to be someone who was locally involved out at the peninsula, and so I went the opposite of the local thing, and I paid the price dearly.
Well, you should look him up. He's a very, very boyish looking lad. He's very, very good. You know, if you want to get into cricket, you could do worse than watching him. But from cricket to soccer, or football as we call it here, I want to know if you can tell me who the top scoring English player is in the English Premier League this year. Is it A, Harry Kane, or B, Daniel Sturridge?
Yeah, I need to say that this is probably more an indictment of my following of other sports than it is probably my following of the UK. So let's clear that up.
That's okay. A, Harry Kane, or B, Daniel Sturridge?
Let's go B.
Oh, wrong again. It's Harry Kane. That's England's number 9, Harry Kane. Again, write it down. Daniel Sturridge is very good too. Okay, right. This is maybe a little bit more on your territory. So this is a baseball question. Who is the most decorated, or the person who's appeared the most from the UK in MLB history? I've got three options for you. Is it A, Lance Painter, B, Colin Baker, or C, Pat Butcher?
You know, I can't say that one over the – I mean, I'm going to go with A.
Yeah, that's right. Lance Painter. He is he's currently the pitching coach in the Mariners AAA team, and he's from Bedford, which is in the south of England. The other two, one was a Doctor Who in the 80s, and the other was a female character in the UK's favourite soap, EastEnders. So you got the right one, and I'm glad.
Well, I knew – I certainly knew the name, and so I went with the one I knew. So there you go. All right. Woohoo!
Excellent. So moving away from sports for a couple of questions. The first one is, who is third in line to the English throne? So who would be the third person in the list from, you know, if the Queen dies, there's a person, and then if that person dies, and so on. So who's third?
I got a lot of work to do, don't I?
there's no multiple choice there. I could give you multiple choice. Is it Prince William, Prince Charles, or Prince George?
Prince William.
No, it's Prince George. He was Prince William's little boy. He was 3.
Gotcha.
So hopefully he's not going to be king anytime soon, but he will be at some point.
You know, if I had actually stopped long enough to think about that, I actually probably would have gotten that. So, all right, fair enough.
Okay, next one. And there's no multiple choice here. I'm hoping you get this one. What is the biggest city in Scotland?
Edinburgh.
It's a trick question.
All right.
Edinburgh, or Edinburgh, as you would put it, is the capital, but the biggest city is Glasgow. Sorry. Some of these are quite mean.
I got a city in the country, right? I mean, that was...
You were in the right country.
All right.
Okay, and the last one, this is multiple choice. Where do Geordies come from? So where do Geordies come from? Do they come from A, Birmingham, B, Newcastle, or C, Belfast?
Well, I'm going to look this up after we get done. So let's go with A.
No, no, it was B. Geordies come from Newcastle.
Okay.
That's a city in the northeast of England, and Geordies have a very, very strong accent. So if you think everyone in the UK sounds like Hugh Grant, you should go and listen to some Geordies. If you can understand what they're talking about, then I'd be very impressed. but yeah, they're certainly worth a look. I was going to say at the end that I think you passed, but I'm not sure you did. You've got plenty of time to learn. We can maybe do this again in a couple of months' time, and I'll ask you the same questions and see if you get the answer.
I got the baseball question right, though, right?
You did. You got the baseball question right. So, you know, your fundamentals are right. You just need to make a few adjustments in baseball speak. Right?
That's funny.
Okay. So that's great. Thanks a lot, Greg. That was really good fun talking to you, and fantastic from our perspective to hear how seriously, if that's the right word, you guys are taking this relationship, and we're all really excited about working with you on it. And I know that a lot of people over in the UK are already subscribing to MILB TV to watch the games. They're desperately awaiting news of how they can get their hands on merchandise, and long may it continue, I guess.
Well, we appreciate you having us, and we're thrilled to be the official affiliate of the UK, and we hope to do the entire following there proud, and certainly more proud than they are of me after that quiz.
Well, yeah, the team happily is in a better place than you are. So before we just let you go, the last thing is to ask how anyone who's not following you can follow like you and the team on Twitter, on Facebook, and on your website too. Where do we find you?
Okay. Well, first I would start off with the website. That's the place that we want most people to go. It's at seawolves.com. We want to make sure that, if they want to follow me on Twitter, it is at seawolves. GM. And so we are on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook, I believe, is Seawolves Fans is the account, and on Twitter, I believe it's Erie_Seawolves. So they're actually a little bit different, but if you search for Erie Seawolves, you'll find it pretty clearly. We have a lot of fun on Twitter in particular. But you know, we encourage folks to go to seawolves.com. They can link through to any of those options from there, and also learn more about us and what we do and our players and all that.
Great. Well, that's about all we've got time for. So thank you very much for your time, Greg, and we can't wait to spend the rest of the year following you and indeed working with you. Cheers.
Cheers to you as well.